Welcome to the Pata Martins podcast. My name is Céline Terranova. I'm an author and brand new podcaster here to help you in your creative career. This show is all about advice, support, and inspiration for performers, writers, musicians, and any kind of artist. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Part-Time Artist Podcast, episode 3 already. Thank you so much for listening to the first two episodes. I got great feedback. You guys seem to enjoy these, and it's great because I really enjoy making them, so I think it works well. Today, my guest is Juan Carlos Porcel, JC, who makes comic books, video games, and replicas. And you might recognize the name because he's also the illustrator of my book. We can talk for hours. I had to cut this interview because we can talk so much, and he's a super interesting guy, so I think you are going to enjoy this interview today. But first, let's talk about the latest news with the Part-Time Artist. If you follow the blog, you probably have seen in the past 2 weeks I've posted a couple of articles. The first one was how to start a podcast on a very low budget. If you listen to this, you might be interested in how I did this, how I started a podcast with pretty much zero budget. I talk about some equipment that I bought, some stuff that I built myself. I also talk about the software that I use, etc. So I think it's quite interesting article to read. I also had an article about 8 things that happen when you quit your day job. Some of you might know that I have quit my day job not long ago, and there's some stuff that changed that I didn't really expect to change, and just stuff that happened that were either good or bad, but I didn't really expect when I had a job. So if you are thinking maybe about quitting your job, that might be the article for you. And I also posted a video on my YouTube channel about the difference of schedule and time management when you're a part-time artist, so when you have a day job, and when you start doing it full-time, because there again, there are some stuff that I didn't really expect. So I explain how I function now that I don't have a day job. Another really, really exciting news, I will be at the next book swap party organized by the Novelic app. This book swap party theme this time, it's non-fiction, so that's awesome. That's why I'm there. It's on the Wednesday, 22nd of May at the Drink Shop and Do Cafe near King's Cross in London. So if you like nonfiction books, come and meet me, have a chat, and meet a lot of nonfiction writers and fans. I've been to one of these events before, and I really enjoyed it. I met a lot of great people. I met a lot of readers. I met a lot of people passionate about books. And so if you like books, that's definitely the place you need to be. And if you come, I will have copies of The Part-Time Artist there, and I'll be able to sign them for you. So that's one more incentive. I'll post all the details in the show notes and also on my social media as soon as I have them. But if you are in London on the 22nd of May, please come and just have a chat with me. Right, that's all for the major news for the past 2 weeks. If you want to be kept updated of everything that I do, don't forget that you can always subscribe to my newsletter from the website, and you get a free ebook if you do, so that's pretty cool, right? And don't forget also to leave a review if you're enjoying this show. That's really helpful because then new listeners can find the show and enjoy it too. So if you are listening on an app like iTunes or Spotify, you can leave a review, and that's really, really helpful. If you find this show helpful, you might be interested in the extra content that I post on Patreon. Patreon is a website where you can support artists like me, and it works a little bit like a crowdfunding website. So you pledge to give a certain amount of money per month, and you get extra bonuses. I have 3 tiers for now, one at $2 per month, one at $8, and one at $15. And the first bonus is already available. It's an extra episode of the podcast, and the title is Find Your Direction as an Artist. I really enjoyed doing it, and I think it's quite interesting to listen to. So if you're interested in becoming one of my patrons, head to patreon.com/thepartimeartist, patreon.com/thepartimeartist. So today, my guest is JC. He is a comic book illustrator. He also does video games, replicas. He has many, many talents. And he's also my first international guest because he's from Bolivia. Welcome, JC.
Hello, and thanks so much for the invitation.
Thank you so much for accepting to be on the podcast. I'm really excited to have someone who is a visual artist. I've had two performers before, so that's a really nice change. Let's start with maybe introducing yourself. Can you explain in a few words who you are and what you do to the listeners?
Well, nothing other than what you said. I'm an illustrator. I have been working in video games lately. Well, last year we released a game with my brother, and I've been trying to do replicas and props for movies for about 3 years, maybe a little bit more. So yeah, I do lots of weird things.
Yeah, you are very busy. I was rewatching some videos on your YouTube channel earlier, and you have a lot of subscribers there, and you have a lot of different things, things like tutorials, and the replica for me are the most you know, interesting to me. How did you get into doing that? Doing these videos where you do tutorials to people?
Well, I have been doing tutorials for a really, really long time. I started with, whenever I learn something new, I usually think if I wanted to learn this, maybe someone else wants. So I started doing these things a long time ago in DeviantArt. Do you remember that site?
God, yes, I remember that. Does it still exist?
Oh, it looks like it's going just fine. Amazingly.
Okay.
So yeah, I started doing tutorials there to use, I don't know, like Flash and Photoshop and whatever thing I found more or less interesting, I did a tutorial on that. So that was the very beginning.
Yeah, and you do also tutorials for comic book drawing that people can follow and do exactly what you're doing. Now, what's your favorite thing to do? Because you have a lot of different things, video games, replicas, comics. What's your favorite?
I don't know. That's a very important question, because I have always thought, after gathering so many different things in my YouTube channel, for example, I was thinking, this is starting to be too much. I mean, it's so many things non-related one to the other one. So I was always thinking, maybe I should do another channel, maybe open another site, but I really don't know. The thing is, since I do all the things, it's kind of impossible to do all of them in one day. I mean, I have a muggle job. Mm-hmm. So my only free time is in the afternoon. And of course, I'm not going to have time to do everything. So I have finally decided to, divide my year into, like, okay, the first 4 months of the year I will do replicas and things, the next 4 months I will be doing like video game design and things like that, and since the comic books are more or less the more easy task, I usually do that all along the year, like in the weekends and a couple of days a week. But yeah, I have decided that separating my year into like pieces, that is starting to more or less work for me.
Wow, that's a great organization, actually. I had never heard someone organizing it like that, but it really does make sense when you have all these different avenues that you can do to try to concentrate on something for a few months. And especially when you have a muggle job. I love that you took the term from the last episode with Lauren.
It's a great term.
I know, right? It's really, really, it's perfect. Let's talk about your muggle job. So you have that, obviously, like a lot of artists, you have a muggle job to pay the bills, and it's affecting your art, as you said, because you don't have that much time. Is it also affecting your art in the terms of inspiration, what you have, or maybe, you know, you're not necessarily doing the things that you want? So how is it affecting you?
Well, luckily, I usually do the things I like. I mean, of course, it's just a regular job and I work in an office, but at least I get to work on web design, which turns out is one of my many hobbies. is not very innovative, but hey, it's entertaining. And I also do a little bit of graphic design, so it's not that bad. But of course, it's not what I would really want to be doing, which turns out is not that bad, because whenever I'm like doing this not perfect job, that's the moment when my imagination usually flies away, and that's when I start getting ideas. And of course, part of my inspiration comes from the fact that, I mean, it's an annoying job and I would rather not be there, but that small amount of hate brings a lot of inspiration. So whenever I get home, it's like, okay, now I'm finally home. Now I'm surrounded by my tools, so now I can get to work. So it's like extra, I don't know, it's extra fun to get to my home and start working on actually interesting things.
Yeah, and I know that some of your comics on your website, the Haters comic, is inspired by your job, and you have like a really funny depiction of your colleagues and everything. And I think it's a really cool way of turning something that could be a frustration and something that would be paralyzing for other artists into something artistic, productive.
Oh yeah, that's my therapy. I mean, that's the way I don't kill myself, because it's, I mean, everyday life, every annoying thing you get, I don't know, you get crushed, you have an accident, or you lose something. There's so many things, and they I think those kind of little annoyances in the life like accumulate to the point where you start like really getting angry and depressed. But if you just let go of your anger, like in tiny little bits, that's like regenerating your patience. So that's what I do. I mean, every time I get really angry, I draw a comic, and it's like, okay, everything's reset, and I can go on with my life in peace.
Yeah, I completely get that, because when I used to have a muggle job and I used to work in the evenings, I would make a point to do something creative before I go, because I needed that kind of, you know, reset or grounding before I go then, before I get really upset or frustrated or just very stressed, because sometimes a job can be really stressful. And I needed that every day to keep my sanity. So I completely get that.
Yep, is really, really important. I mean, the problem is you usually don't realize that you're like starting to get annoyed with the world. So sometimes, yeah, you're like all angry and you don't know why. And it's because of that, because little tiny annoyances along the week have been building into a really annoying thing that you don't realize it's going around in your head.
Absolutely. And I wanted to go back to where you live. So you live, as I said at the beginning, in Bolivia. And I know that when we talked before, because we have talked several times, you talked about how art is seen in your country, which is a bit different from the UK or the US or Europe. And can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, art is basically a joke over here. There's no way that you come out of school and you go to study art and someone is going to tell you, oh, that's a fine job to do. You will earn a lot of money. No, that's never happened, and probably will never happen in a very long time. Art is, yeah, if you study art, you will be a starving artist. That's it. There's no other way. There's no other way to do art and not be hungry and poor. Or at least that's the perception of society, basically.
I know that where I come from in Belgium, there is a little bit that perception too, and there's a lot of people working to challenge that too. And I feel it is still quite a stereotype that you have in many other places. But yeah, the way you talked about it is really, it's quite kind of defeating for young artists in Bolivia, because they just have so many obstacles just because of what people say to them.
Yes, and it's not only it's not only in the like fine arts level, because even people like graphic designers, for example, they are like, oh yeah, graphic designer, you draw pictures, which is like, anyone can do that. That's not a real job. That's like that's what you do when you can't study like engineering or law or medicine.
That's very sad, and I think there's something in that is also a generation problem, because obviously when we think about our parents' generation, they didn't really have much of a choice, and indeed for them, if they were choosing to go into the arts, it was kind of like they didn't have a choice and they would just
not
have money.
That is true.
Yeah, and I hope that it is changing now, but of course they're still there, and for them, when you have a son or a daughter saying, I'm going to be an artist, it must be really scary.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, my brother started studying systems engineering, software engineering, and he was like fed up and annoyed by the thing like halfway through. So he went into graphic design. And of course, my family was like a terrible drama for many, 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 many months until they were like, okay, yeah, fine. Go finish your career. That's it. We will see after that. But yes, it was very dramatic because, yeah, engineering and law and those things are like you have your future more or less secured. Other than that, you will probably have many problems.
I can completely understand that, because when I quit my career in science, I was a scientist, and that was seen as really secure. Well, to go into something more artistic, my parents also were very worried. It was not a drama, but it was a lot of worries, and I think a lot of young artists, especially if you have opportunity to do something different, and they will be pushed towards the other thing that makes a little bit of money.
Hey, going from physicist to writer, even I would have told you, are you insane? What are you doing?
Maybe I'm a bit insane. I guess that's the hard part about becoming an artist. In your head, you have your path in front of you and you know where you're going. But the problem is you don't have any proof right now of what you're doing, because you still need to progress. You need to get all your stuff done and everything. So nobody else can really see the vision that you have in your head. And that's why it's so difficult to convince other people that you have a future in there.
Yep, true that.
And when we talk about young people, you are very experienced in telling me about a lot of different experience from young people, because you're a teacher too. Can you tell me more about it?
Yes, me and a couple of friends came up with the idea of, well, more or less the same idea that made me do all my tutorials. There's a lot of things that I was never able to find a proper course or a proper teacher. So we decided, well, we had so many, we wasted so many time trying to learn how to make comics, how to practice drawing and, I don't know, layouts and all these little details. And we said, okay, maybe we should prepare a course and we should put together a curriculum with everything that we would have liked to be taught, like back when we were kids. So yeah, we put it together. And we very luckily found an organization over here gave us money to actually implement the thing. So we more or less, as a joke, said, okay, yeah, maybe someone will give us the money. And someone did. So we were very surprised. And we started the course and then started even more surprises, because there was a lot of people interested and they were like very, very good artists. So that was very encouraging for us.
That's awesome. Like, first of all, to see that you had the idea and then someone was interested into financing you, which kind of shows that there's an evolution into how art is seen. And also you have so much interest. And you told me that before that some of your students are lawyers, are engineers, people with very, very busy, big jobs, but they just want to draw comics.
Yep, there was a couple of, well, because they were mainly young people, and even like from 13 years old and so on. But there were a couple of people that were, they had like families and jobs, and they still had the interest and the will to sacrifice a little bit of their time to go and learn something that's like fun and interesting.
And your course is quite intense. You have, it's 2 years, isn't it?
Yes, we actually made a two-year course with like semesters and exams and final projects and everything. It's like, okay, this is not a joke. This like it's a serious course where you're going to study seriously. And even though even our own students think they are going to go and play and draw little things. One of our first classes is telling them, this is not like playing and drawing little things. This is a serious course and serious studies, and you're going to suffer because art or drawing is as hard as, I don't know, anything that you think is a serious subject, this is also serious. So start behaving like that.
I love that you say it's a serious course and you're going to have to work for it, because I think there's sort of the stereotype about comic books, which I don't believe in, but I've heard about it quite a lot, that it's not real art. And it makes me furious about that, because it is real art. And I think there's kind of snobism a little bit about that compared to fine art.
I think it's not as hard as it was, but of course, like 20, 30 years ago, that was most certainly true. Like, oh yeah, comic books are not even graphical art. They're just the crap that you put in the newspapers. That's it.
But it also depends on, I guess, which country you're from. I know that if you are talking to, let's say, Japanese people have a culture in mangas, they are going to be seen completely differently than
Absolutely.
If you go to a different country. But yeah, I think in general, it's not seen as serious. So I love that you say to your students, you know what, you thought you were coming here to doodle a little bit. No, you are going to have to study. And I think you study also... like storytelling, so not just drawing.
Yes, of course. We start because, well, I mean, if you want to do a comic book, it's similar to doing a video game, it's similar to doing a novel. I mean, you first need to learn how to tell a story. That's the first thing. So whenever people come and they're like, okay, when do we start doodling? And we have to tell them, you are not going to draw nothing for the next like 5 months, because you first need to start to tell a story and write a little bit and all of these like necessary skills before you even start thinking of doing a page.
I get that, but that's something that I guess most people don't get about comic books. They just think that the stories just come out of your mind and just draw it and everything.
And whatever you draw is going to be perfectly understandable and well written. It's kind of amazing. And of course, I thought that myself, so I don't blame anyone for thinking that.
I find it actually quite amazing, because we worked together on my book, The Part-Time Artist, and you were given, you know, I gave you a couple of, you know, ideas that I had, but I had no idea of how to illustrate my thoughts. So you had my words and you turned them into very easy to understand images that really illustrated the concepts that I was talking about. And I think that takes a lot of talent. It's a sort of minimalism of ideas to just turn them into one cartoon.
Well, I think it's in good part. Well, I've been doing my comic like for 100 years, so that was a good time for practice. But I also think that I have, I don't know, maybe a couple of years ago, started to really trying to work on things that I care about, because I spent a couple of years, jobless, doing freelance, because one of my, the office I was working for kind of closed down, and I was like, okay, well, I don't have a family yet. I have really no major expenses. I was living with my family. So I said, okay, maybe I should start working freelancing. And the money was okay, but I really, really started hating working for like meaningless jobs and really annoying things that I didn't really like. And when I read your, well, I didn't read your book before wanting to work with it, but when I looked at your site and your little questionnaire and I thought, yeah, this is meaningful. This I can understand. And of course, when I read your book, it was like, oh, this is exactly my story. So I already had the ideas and the images in my mind, because, yeah, it's really similar. So it was not at all difficult.
It's interesting what you say, because I am also a freelance writer. So on top of the business, I'm also doing some contracts and everything. And I completely get that sometimes you just hate the job, even if it's technically the thing that you want to do, so in my case, smoking, you're still not really happy because it's just a theme that you don't like, or the client is very demanding for no reason, and these kind of things. So
last year, I broke my promise to myself, and it was a huge mistake because I was, I had finished, well, we launched with my brother and another friend this platformer game. And I was like really inspired to make more pixel art and these video game things. And some guys contacted me and told me if I wanted to make their logo for their Facebook page and group and stuff. And I didn't quite felt okay. I was like, don't really like this, but okay, it's pixel art. Yeah, let's do it. Oh man, that was a freaking mistake. I spent the next 3 months like redoing the logo 100 times. In the end, I just ghosted them. I never answered them their messages again. I didn't care that I did not charge them. I never went to pick up my money. But I say I am free. That will be enough for me right now.
Oh my God, this is something that I'm sure is going to resonate with a lot of artists out there who are listening to this podcast, because it is the experience that you can get with freelance, and it's very, very difficult because obviously you still want to do a good job. You want to keep your reputation too, of course, because that's how you get the jobs. But sometimes some people are just really not reasonable because they don't necessarily understand what you're doing.
Exactly. and they hire you to do a job and then they stop you from doing it. It's so annoying.
So what's your advice in that case? Is it just going with your gut? So just doing something that interests you?
I personally just go with my gut because, well, I have my Moogle job, so I don't really, really need the money. So I have the luxury of telling no to people. I really can't say what to do when you're, for example, a full-time freelancer and you actually need your job. Maybe just take the smallest project possible, so if it's horrible you can like finish it more or less quickly so you don't have to suffer too much. But yeah, me personally, I really started following my gut. I mean, it's like, oh, that looks nice, so I will try to work on that.
That's a great advice, I think. And honestly, I wish I had heard about it before taking some of the jobs that I did. But yeah, you learn, I guess.
Sadly, there is no other way to learn than messing things up.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I have a couple of questions from Twitter.
Cool.
People were very excited when I said that you were coming on the show. So awesome. The first one is from Alex. And the question is, how do illustrators fit drawings in small boxes, panels? And he says for him, it's tough to draw small.
Ew. Well, yes, that's one of the very, well, that's the one of the first things that you have to learn when doing like sequential art and comics. You probably have like a million ideas that want to go into the page, but the most important thing is to know what to remove. Like taking out unnecessary things is probably one of the most important things. And when me and my friends started doing comics like for competitions, I mean, we believe we were like, okay, yeah, we know how to draw. Let's start competing. And I probably think that the first big competition we won, it was, we didn't win. We came at second or something like that. And I really remember that because now that I more or less went back and like reread my comic book, it was filled with unnecessary panels and things that I thought look cool but didn't really add anything to the story. So yeah, the first thing is to, I mean, stop loving all your ideas. Start just cutting them away, because not everything is important. Not everything needs to read everything.
You know, for writers, we have an expression for that. It's kill your darlings.
Oh, yes.
You know, because sometimes you have a scene that you really love and it's, you know, you really enjoy doing it, but then it doesn't bring anything to the big picture. So you have to remove it. And it's like killing someone you love because you just love that scene. And I guess that's the things that you learn to be a bit ruthless when you get more experience.
You have to separate yourself from your work.
Oh,
That
that's
that's it. You,
difficult,
you,
though.
yep, your work is not you. So it's just a thing that you need to prepare and to construct and to evolve and to perfect. And that usually means it has to be cut in half, probably several times.
Absolutely, I totally agree. Okay, let's go to the next Twitter question. It's from a bloke, Dyslexic, on Twitter. And he said he was really curious about the scripting side of comics and how to lay it out for an artist to take on and draw. So I guess if you work with someone who's writing and someone else who's drawing, or if you do it all yourself, I know that you are doing it all yourself, but how do you do that?
Well, I usually, oh man, I have a video when it's in Spanish. Damn. Well, okay, maybe I should do an English version sometime in the future. I
Definitely.
usually, yes, I usually, I have three steps. I mean, coming up with the ideas usually happens all the time. So I have Evernote on my phone. So whenever some even tiny small idea comes up, I just open the app and write it down. I mean, really, really, really vague sentences. Doesn't really need to have too much detail. It just needs to remind me of the idea. Next step, I usually do this maybe once a week or something like that. I grab all these very vague ideas from my Evernote app, and I put them on Google Drive because that's usually my main writing app. So then if I have like 2 lines from my idea, I just put them on Google Drive. I rewrite them so they are actually well understandable by me. And usually that happens on the weekends. And along the week, I go back to those to these Google Drive documents, and then I start writing a script, like turning that idea into actual dialogue. So those are more or less my three steps. Writing on my phone whenever an idea comes up. Then passing everything into Google Drive in a more readable and understandable way. And the final step is to actually write dialogues
It
for my comic
sounds
strips.
quite a lot like steps when you write a script. I've written a couple of scripts for short films mainly, and you start with the idea, and then you go to synopsis, where it's basically explaining everything that's going to happen, and then the next step is to add the dialogues and the action, etc. It really sounds like that.
Yeah, of course. Well, since I'm working mostly alone, I don't actually need a synopsis. So, yeah, if I was working with someone else, that would absolutely be another step.
Yeah, so that the other person can understand where you're coming from.
Yes, and of course, if you're actually like working with like the writer, the inker, the colorist, the one who makes the dialogues and all those steps between the writer and if you have like a cartoonist that's actually going to draw the things, there's also a lot of different like formats for like script writing, but for comics.
Oh,
Yeah,
okay.
there are many, many, many styles. So I guess a good Googling for that would be nice. But yes, there are many formats that to go from the writer to the colorist to the artist to the one who makes the letters to like that.
Yeah, I guess the big comics that you hear about, the things like Marvel and DC, they have, I don't know, like dozens of people working on them.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, there's a person for every piece of the work.
Okay, well, I've learned something because I really didn't know how this was produced. So that's really awesome. Let me see. I have one more question from Twitter. Another question from Alex, actually, who was really interested in having you on in the show. How do you practice and work on improving your craft?
Oof. Okay, I am really bad at practicing, like really, really bad. But I can tell you what you should do, which I don't. I mean, the advice is the same for everything you want to do, be it comics or building things. It's just practice every day. Even if it's a little like a stick figure, you should be drawing every single day. And I was almost about to be successful in practicing because I bought this art course, which is like really long, and I decided to start studying and drawing and practicing before going to work. So I woke up like an hour before and I started drawing then. And it was going very well. And it also provided the added bonus that after drawing for an hour before going to work, I mean, I was really happy. So I was like, oh, this is fantastic. I have already drawn for an hour. I'm really happy. So work should not be that bad. Sadly, after a couple of months of this, me and my wife got a little puppy. So that completely threw my nice morning plans out the window.
Don't put that on the puppy. That is not fair.
Oh, yes. No, that's the thing. I say that I'm really bad at practicing because I am an expert to come up with excuses for myself. And I was like, oh, no, I'm too sleepy because I have to go walk the puppy in the morning. And, oh, no, I'm too tired because I have to go walk the puppy in the night. So, yeah, I suck. It's really bad. It's terrible. I hate myself all the time because I'm not practicing.
Oh, no, don't say that. I mean, there are some times in the year, especially for me, where I'm just going to write more and some where I'm going to write less. I feel like when it's the winter, for some reason, I'm much less motivated into just like taking an hour and just writing a piece. And then in the summer, I'm just like more like, yeah, let's do something. So, you know, don't feel guilty. It happens sometimes that you will just go through, you know, a few months where you're not gonna write, you know, do as much, but it doesn't mean that you're not practicing. Maybe you just need to kind of mature some ideas.
I don't know. I guess everyone works differently, but I really think I need some bullying from either from myself or from someone else. But I don't think I'm ever going to do things like in good terms. I'm always doing things when it's either too late or there's too much work, or I don't know. That's how I work. It's really sad, but most of the time, sadly, some of my best work comes out when I'm running out of time or I'm really angry. I don't know. It's my sad way of doing things.
No, don't worry. I'm a master in procrastination, and I will, you know, do stuff at the last minute too. So yeah. I completely understand. And I think that is a trait of a creative person, to be honest, that we are not necessarily going to do like military discipline, because sometimes you just, you know, you're not inspired, you don't feel like it. But sometimes you also have to be a bit strict with yourself. That's a difficult balance to get.
I would say I tell myself that I need to have more discipline, because that thing about the inspiration, I don't remember where did I read this, but somewhere I read that, I mean, the difference between like amateurs and professionals is that amateurs wait for inspiration and professionals sit down and work, because that's it, because you have to do it. You can't be just there sitting around drinking a little tea and waiting for inspiration to come. Is like, no, you need to push yourself and sit down and do the things. And yeah, of course, as you say, you can't do that all the time, but I think you should maybe strive for that, even if it's not quite possible.
I think it was Elizabeth Gilbert. She wrote a book called Big Magic. She was talking about that inspiration, like the genius, the creative genius, is going to come. But when it comes, it has to find you.
Yeah, find you working.
Ready. Yeah, working. Yep. Because otherwise, you know what? It's going to go and find someone else who is working.
Yep. And yeah. Actually, regarding that inspiration thing, now that I think of it, when I started doing my comics, I posted maybe like one or two strips, maybe one strip per week. And it usually was at the beginning of the week. So I usually took maybe Saturday to write and Sunday to fix things and to write the dialogues and start drawing on Monday or something like that. And it was so difficult because I couldn't come up with ideas. I was there in front of my white paper and just suffering because I didn't know how to do it. And it has been gradually becoming better and better. And right now, I don't even need to sit down and write. I just, like, more or less in my head, think of the story during the week. And maybe Sunday at 6 or 7 in the afternoon, I sit down, I draw a couple of things, and I make the dialogues Monday morning. And it's really, really simple now, but that's after 4 years of doing the same thing. So, yeah, I mean, inspiration is a muscle. It's a physical machine that needs to be put to work. And the more it works, the easier it becomes.
I love that. Inspiration is a muscle. I think that's something that we all need to remember.
Yes.
I always say, and I talk about it in my book, that you need to create habits for your creativity. Because motivation is not going to come out of nowhere.
No.
You need to create a habit and just do that over and over and over again. And the more you do it, the easier it's going to get. I remember the worst writer's block that I've ever had was because I just was not writing.
Oof, okay. Yeah, I would even say, forget about inspiration. Inspiration that does not exist. The only thing that exists is your practice and as you were saying, you need to make a routine of everything you do. And that's the only way.
I completely agree. I think that's a lot of people are going to listen to that and just say, yeah, actually, it feels right. It just feels like, you know what, let's just be present, be there, and then the magic is going to come eventually.
Yeah, because that's the thing. Most people, especially artists, which is ironic, they have this magical, wondrous, fairy-like notion of inspiration as like literally a little fairy that comes and touches you in the forehead and, oh, there's your idea. And maybe that's not very good because, like I said, I mean, you just sit down and hope for inspiration to come completely passively. And I think that's really not good.
Well, I think that that leads very well into my last question, because what's your best piece of advice for the listeners, especially people who might be struggling or might be wanting to go into comic books? What's the best thing you can advise them?
Okay, yeah, I was thinking about this question, and I think I will give an advice, maybe not to that question precisely, but you see, your book is for people which more or less have already found their thing. They know their way, they just need to like implement it. They maybe know they want to be an artist, but they don't really know how.
Mm-hmm. But that's true.
Yeah, but I mean, when I was teaching my courses, there were a couple of people that even though they were, they knew they liked art and they liked to draw, but they still had a lot of like questions about, should I be doing this? Is this really what I want? Do I really like this? Is there anything else out there for me? And I was thinking, how to find your call? I think that's the question I want to answer. Because you see how many weird and different things I do, and I really hope, it would have been nice if I did all these things when I was younger. When I was younger, I really believed society in the stupid idea that, for example, you can only be good at one thing, or you can study just one thing. And I think that's one of the biggest problems in education everywhere. People think that you are either an engineer or you're either a medic or a lawyer, or you have to be one thing and that's it. And that is
absolutely
the worst thing you can possibly have in your head. And the way I think I found of finding your call is collecting hobbies, is trying everything that calls to you, everything you find interesting. You should just go and do it. And probably parents do a lot of that, like pushing us to going to, go to piano classes or to karate or to, I don't know, things like that. But sadly, it's not really our call. We just start hating everything we do because it was not our idea. So I would say if you want to find your calling, probably start, I don't know, maybe after school when you more or less have a vague idea of the world. But if you like comics, do a comic. If you find interesting video games, go and do a video game. If you like novels and books, go write one. If you like board games, design a board game. That's the key. You like something, you go and you do your own version. If you like a movie, go and do a movie. That's how you find out. And you will most certainly realize that people are not, we don't have just one job. We have many. And we can gather our top two or three jobs and make all of them into a single thing. For example, I mean, I was more or less pushed into studying software engineering because I I really didn't understand biology. I really hated people. So, I mean, going into like administrative things was not a possibility. Of course, art was a joke. So that was also not possible. So yeah, more or less the last hope for me was computers. Turns out I actually really enjoy programming. So I liked programming and I kept more or less practicing along the years. And then I realized, oh yeah, I also like drawing. So maybe I should do like pictures and things. And yeah, many years later, I mixed the programming with the art and out came a video game. And I would have never ever I would have never done something like that if I only stayed as an engineer or quit that and become just an artist. So you have to collect many skills.
I really, really completely agree with you because, I mean, I've said before, I used to be a physicist, but it's not because I have quit physics that I'm not interested in that anymore. I'm still reading about it. I'm still really interested in it. It's just I did that because in high school, art again was not, I was out of the question and I was good at it and I enjoyed part of it. It was just not fulfilling me. So I think your advice is great for, especially if we have, you know, if you're listening to this and you just feel frustrated and you just feel like you just want to do something, but you just don't know what, I think it's the perfect advice. Just try something.
Yep.
If you're attracted to
gardening, to anything.
Try gardening. Gardening is not just for, you know, retirees, you know.
Yeah.
If you're interested in comic books, try comic books. It doesn't matter if it's not going to be perfect, because it's definitely not going to be perfect if you try it at first. But you might find your fulfillment in that. And that's super important.
Yeah, if you like ice cream, go do ice cream. I'm sure a lot of people who like really enjoy food would probably make great chefs.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. Yeah, cooking is not a job, so no one does it.
Yeah, it's really sad because it could be your job and it could be very artistic. There's this series on Netflix, Chef's Table, that shows how incredible you have chefs. They're doing pieces of art with food. Well, you don't know if it's your thing until you try it.
Exactly, and that's other thing. It's really, I don't know, I believe there's like an absolute disconnect between us and the things we like. I mean, there's really no way to know what you will enjoy until you're actually doing it. That's the sad part. So you have to do even the silliest, most weird things you can imagine just to know if you like it.
Well, I think that's a perfect advice. So where can people find you if they're interested in what you're doing, in, you know, your comics, your YouTube videos? Where can they find you?
I think the main place where I have all my links is my Twitter. So it's JC Porcel at Twitter. And yeah, I think that there are all my links. You can also Google Haters Comic, which is not very popular.
Or, I love it. I read it all the time. I love it.
And well, in the Elder Props, that is actually my site where I put all my arts and crafts and my props. And that is actually kind of more or less well known. So that's easier to find.
Well, I will put all the links in the show notes anyway, so
yes,
people can click them directly. And do you have any coming projects, anything that you are currently working on?
Well, I have decided to dedicate this year to video games and trying to be a little bit more, I mean, to have some practice. Because we made a game with my brother last year. It was okay. It was a very decent game. But we more or less said, okay, if we actually want to make something like real, we need practice. So we gave ourselves this year to practice in our separate ways. So we said, okay, each one of us has to make a game on their own. And next year we can more or less compare notes and build something from that.
That's so interesting. Wow. That's a great project. What kind of games are you guys doing?
I'm really stuck in the past. So I really like really simple platformers. I like pixel art. I like, I guess, all these things that I was not quite that able to play when I was young. So I'm building a little platformer game.
Oh, that's awesome. You know what? That's what I used to play too. I had a old console that I still have now, and I was playing things like Sonic and things like that. So
Oh,
yeah.
hey, I think video games are like philosophy. The basics and the fundamentals will always be valid and good.
I think that's a perfect way to close the show. Thank you so much for being on the show. I think it was really interesting and it was awesome to hear from you. I cannot believe I had a guest on the other side of the planet. How crazy is that?
The world is a very tiny place.
I know, definitely. Well, thank you so much and thank you guys for listening and I hope you enjoyed the episode. Thank you for listening to the Pata Matis podcast. If you want more advice and inspiration, head to the website, thepartumartistinoneword.com, and don't forget to subscribe and leave a review if you enjoyed the show.